Penguin Random House Audio presents The Real Michael Swan by Brian Reardon. Read for you by Will Dameron. To my wife, Michelle, who after 20 years deserves far more than this dedication. Introductions. Today's the day. Therapy, which means it's a Tuesday or a Thursday. I close my eyes, trying to figure out which one. The emptiness frustrates me. Out of an old habit now, I touch my left temple. There is no physical reminder of what happened. Only memories. Some mine, some not. The therapist walks in right on time. Dressed, as she always is, in a long, colorful dress and warm-looking jacket, she leaves no doubt as to her profession, not in here, at least. Her name is Marcy Simmons. And like I said, today is the day. She sits across the table from me. A video screen is poised between us, ready to begin. She looks me in the eyes, which is something that only happens on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Are you sure you're ready for this? I nod, so she hits play. The video is grainy, painted in the shades of a surveillance camera, gray-green. The first shot shows the back of someone's head as he pushes through a mass of people until he reaches the down escalator. He carries a common-looking briefcase in his left hand. Someone in a dark uniform puts a hand up, but the other man pushes past and bolts down and out of the shot. Next, what appears to be the same man, still carrying the case, sprints along the platform of a subway station. After that, a series of short clips show him running through the darkness of a tunnel. At one point, Marcy Simmons pauses the video. "This is it," she says. I nod again, so she continues. The next shot is hard to understand. The man runs. The camera shakes. Something comes crashing down from the ceiling of the tunnel, striking the man, knocking him off his feet. Suddenly, a wall of smoke or dust, strangely alien in the greenish tint of the surveillance camera, swallows everything. "That's me?" I ask. This time, she nods. "Do you remember?" I can only laugh at that. This isn't really my story. It's hers, though I have no idea where she is. As the long days turn to longer nights, when I close my eyes, I still see her face, the look in her eye, even. It's all I have. That and this story of hers. I imagine that if anyone is to read this, they would wonder how I can know everything that happened. Well, the truth is that this story doesn't come from the words of others. Words are undependable, memories even worse. Instead, her tale comes from my soul, from our souls. That is why I can assure you that it is nothing but real. On a Friday in August, a bomb was detonated under New York City. Hundreds were killed and thousands injured. It happened at a time when our country already teetered on the edge. It touched all of our lives, changing everything, changing the world. It confounded our realities, challenging every basic principle of an aging society. It caused us all to suspect those around us. Who are our friends? Who are our enemies? It caused us to question our neighbors, even our families, even ourselves. You may ask, who am I to tell this story? To that, this is my answer. Part 1. Chapter 1. I can see her every day. I close my eyes and she appears out of the darkness, a brightness that I simply don't deserve. I can still picture her on that day. She wore a white tank top and capri pants, although it took me months to remember that is what they are called. She stood in the light, its beams touching the soft skin of her cheeks and the heart-stopping strength in her eyes. Her dark hair was pulled back, highlighting the lines of her face and classically long neck. She looked like a runner and a leader, a mother and a timeless beauty, at least to me. And I saw the ring on her finger, silver and simple. Her name was Julia. Julia Swan. On the day it happened, she sat on her back porch with two neighbors, Evelyn and Tara. Their kids played out in the yard with large and expensive water guns. Their excited screams echoed throughout the tight-knit, established neighborhood nestled in the countryside outside Philadelphia.
"Can you believe the riots last night?" Julia asked.
"Crazy, right? I don't get it."
"Me either," Evelyn said. "These protests are sort of like the wrestling my brother used to watch when he was a kid."
Julia laughed.
"Yeah, but that was fake. This is real."
"I think they should just arrest them all," Tara said,
her tone sharper than the others.
"They're full of it, screaming about promises and that damn wall. No one even seems to care that so many people are losing their jobs."
Evelyn and Julia didn't say anything for a moment. They knew full well how charged this topic could be, especially with Tara. Yet Julia also knew how worried her friend was, and she wanted to give her a chance to let it out. Maybe it would help.
"Over 1,000 layoffs?" she asked, her brow rising and her glass of Chardonnay tipping in her right hand.
Tara nodded. Her eyes reddened as she looked away. Most of the neighborhood knew that she and her family probably would have to move if her husband couldn't find a new job.
"It's just so messed up," Tara said. "I mean, I thought he'd work there for his entire career. That's what my dad did."
"Everything's so different now," the third mother, Evelyn Chase, added.
She had short dark hair and wore coordinating Athleta running clothes. Julia leaned back and watched the children. Her boys, Evan, 12, and Thomas, 8, were close friends with Evelyn's oldest, Brady. At that moment, they stood with their heads close together, like they were planning the perfect coordinated attack on the other children.
"Is it definite?" Julia asked.
"I think so, but they haven't announced who's getting cut. I guess there was a big meeting today, but I haven't heard anything yet."
"Can he find something local?"
Tara shook her head and laughed.
"I doubt it. He's a plant geneticist. The jobs, if there are any, are going to be in the Midwest."
She laughed again, but this time a tear ran down her cheek.
"Can you just picture it? Me in Iowa?"
"It's really nice out there," Evelyn said.
"That's what I hear. Franny Good moved there a few years ago and loves it."
"Really?" Tara asked.
"Yeah," Evelyn said. "You'll be okay. It'll be hard at first, but any change is. And you'll see, the kids will be great. I mean, look at them. They get along with everyone. And with their sports, it'll be great."
"What if they don't make a team?"
Julia shook her head.
"Yeah, right."
The three of them stopped talking for a second. They sipped their wine with a practiced synchrony. The kids continued to laugh and call out as a neighbor drove by, honking her horn in greeting. The three smiled and waved.
"She just started working at the library," Julia mentioned absently.
"Karen?"
"Yep."
"At the school?"
"No, in the borough."
"Really?"
Julia nodded.
"That's great," Evelyn said.
Julia's phone vibrated. It sat on the arm of the Adirondack chair she and Michael bought when they went to the beach in June. She glanced at the screen and saw the call came from her husband.
"I have to take this."
"No problem,"
Evelyn said.
Julia shot a quick glance at Tara, finding her watching the kids. It looked like her friend might cry at any moment. As she rose from the chair,
phone in one hand and wine on the
Sample complete. Ready to continue?